Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, 4 o'clock. What's up? Welcome back. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan, starting our third hour of our 4.5 today. Got a juicy blitz for you. We're excited about it. It's like when you go to Wegmans, you walk up and you say to the guy cutting the meat, let me get whatever you got back there that's your best. Nice, juicy, and it's ready to be consumed. So let's hop to it. We're talking hoops, football, and baseball on the blitz. Quinton Mayo, NBC Sports Washington, has a lot of fun with the crew and does a great job breaking the Wizards down. And sometimes you got to rely on them to make it fun because the Wiz don't always. But, Quinton, that was not the case last night. Win number 3 on the season. Before we get into some of the COVID concerns, they poured in 128. They blew out the 7-3 Suns coming into the game. They did it without Russell Westbrook, no Thomas Bryant, and Bradley Beal led the way. 34-9-8 for Brad, who's been unbelievable.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, and they played defense. They played defense. They got their first W at home this season by playing defense. They held a team that was 6th in the NBA in three-point percentage to under 15% from deep. That's crazy. This Wizards team has only done that 4 times since 2017, and it's come against far worse competition.
Defense. I had to write that down. That's the opposite of what you do when you're on offense. That's something they haven't learned about a lot this year. Quinton, Scott Brooks talked about running more plays on offense as a way maybe to help their defense. Go into that a little bit.
I mean, that was music to my ears. That's something that I've been extremely critical of this entire season so far, and even Scott Brooks' tenure for that matter, is that it's a very basic offense that he runs. He's really good. He's really high on just getting in transition and getting out and running, and that's not always the case in the NBA, especially if you don't have the defensive pieces to force turnovers. So now you see more creativity, at least last night, where it's not just Bradley Beal running screen and rolls and everybody just watching. It looked like a little more back screening and things of that nature for the other guys that are around the perimeter, and that definitely helps.
Has that been a big issue, you think, just a lot of guys standing around watching Westbrook or Beal or anybody else?
Absolutely. I talked to one of the players, and they said everybody in the gym knows what we're going to do. It's Bradley Beal and get out the way. And that is not, you know, necessarily a fault of Brad or Scott Brooks. I mean, he's the best player in the league right now, or one of the best players. He's had 135 points through 3 games, the first player since Michael Jordan and James Harden to have 10 straight games to start a season of 25 or more. He's a bucket getter, but that's only going to get you so far, especially when he's not like a two-way Kawhi Leonard-level defender. You got to have some other guys help.
So find other guys to help. No Thomas Bryant, who was a liability defensively, I felt, but he was getting out and running, Quinton, and getting buckets because of it. Russell Westbrook will find you. You'll get some follow-up dunks and, you know, maybe the occasional open jump shot from everyone paying attention to those guys. But they may be a better team without him getting heavy minutes on the court. Is that a hot take?
I think that's a hot take. I definitely do. I know a lot of people like to point to, well, he didn't play last night, and Robert Lopez got his first start and had a double-double, and they played better defense. I don't know if it's that linear. A lot of the issues from this team, specifically on the defensive end, have come from perimeter defending. They switch so much 1-5 around the perimeter, and that leaves Thomas Bryant or whoever the center is as the last line of defense. And, I mean, these guys can only do so much in the paint. I think that energy and the stretchiness of Thomas Bryant, who can knock down threes, mid-ranges as well, that's something that this team is desperately looking for and going to have to get out of Robin Lopez and Mo Wagner. But Robin is not as mobile. He's not as active. He's not the best screen setter and roller, and that's something that this offense is kind of built upon. So they're going to struggle. I mean, yeah, this last game was good. This is Robert Lopez's first double-double since his time in Chicago in 2019. However, moving forward, they're definitely going to be missed or going to miss what Thomas Bryant brings to that offense.
All right, Quinton, we got less than a minute, but we do have to ask you about this COVID situation. So what's going on with the concern that they have right now?
Yeah, they had two players placed into the NBA's health and safety protocols, and it's not looking too good. I'm not, you know, obligated to give any more information than that. However, this is an issue the Wizards and the entire league is facing. The Celtics haven't played games in 3 nights. More cancellations upon the horizon, and it looks like now the NBA has implemented basically a bubble from home, like a telework bubble, that if you could look at it that way, of guys, either you go to the court, you play basketball, and you go back home, and they're trying to cut down on that. But yeah, this Wizards team is definitely the last team in the NBA that needs to be impacted by missing players or anything because of COVID, and it seems like the bad just keeps getting worse here in D.C.
Quentin, thank you, buddy. Always appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your week.
Appreciate you guys. Have a good one.
Sam Fortier of the Washington Post talking about the Washington football team right here on the Beltway Blitz. That's how we do it. Sam, give me kind of the fallout here. Losing to Tampa Bay, no shame in that. They're really good. Washington 7-9, probably just okay. I think the biggest surprise to Grant and I want to see what your take is, that the defense didn't have more of an impact. Specifically, maybe the bookend pass rushers didn't have more disruption in this ballgame. But Tampa's offense, well over 500 yards. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that was surprising. I mean, when you go into that against Tom Brady, you understand, like, hey, he's going to know what you're trying to do to him. He's not going to be fooled. He's going to be able to say, okay, you know, you got your guy on left tackle Donovan Smith. I'm going to adjust this way. You expected that. But I was not prepared for how much, you know, non-quick game they had. You know, like, Tom Brady threw, I think it was something like 70% of his passes were 10 yards or more beyond the line of scrimmage, and he had – you know, almost 3 full seconds to stand back there. And those two numbers should tell you that this was not a hey, you know, they're going to get here quick, so I got to get rid of it quicker sort of deal. This was, for most of the game, they did not generate the pass rush that they expected to. And obviously you saw some of it come up the middle late with Daron Payne and John Allen. But you're right. I think it was a disappointing performance from those bookend pass rushers.
Did Ryan Kerrigan play his last game with this team?
From what we heard on locker cleanout day on Sunday, it did seem like that. You know, he looked and sounded like a guy who knew the run was over. You know, he talked about when he goes into free agency, he's going to be balancing a big role versus a team that he thinks he can contend with a Super Bowl with. So it is. It did sound like he had acknowledged, hey, I want to be a starter. I believe I have good years left, and maybe that is not going to be an opportunity here.
Quarterback, what did we learn? I mean, the Heinicke story is awesome. I had a great time. I think he had fun. I think we all had fun. It was really cool. But what does that mean long term? Just give me an assessment here, Sam, at the end of the season as we pull up here in mid-January of that quarterback room and where the answers might lie.
Yeah, so let's just, you know, start with the fact that the long-term option is not on this roster, unless Taylor Heinicke ends up being a miraculous story that maybe we haven't seen before. Really, you got three buckets to address the future of the quarterback position. You start with the trade market. You think to yourself, okay, is Carson Wentz or Sam Darnold or Matt Stafford, any of those guys available? Obviously, you know, each one has a flaw. That's why they'd be available. But I think those are kind of the targets. In free agency, bucket two, the only two starters who are under 30 that could be available are Dak Prescott, if he doesn't re-sign with Dallas, which I think is kind of up in the air, and Jameis Winston, who hasn't played this year in New Orleans. So that's a tough one as well. So bucket three is the draft. And really at 19, you might be in range for North Dakota State's quarterback Trey Lance. And then also you probably have to go to tier two, you know, Florida's Kyle Trask, Alabama's Mac Jones. That is kind of, the options available at this point. And as you guys can tell from my rambling, that means there's not a great option that stands out for this team moving forward.
Mac Jones was sensational last night, but his offensive line and those receivers and Steve Sarkisian and everything that comes with him when he plays at Alabama is not also coming to Washington. So I'm just not sure about him and Trask. I feel like a lot of those guys around the league are going to grade them in the second round, the third round, and they're still going to go in the first round. You're rolling the dice there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's the biggest question that you have to answer if you're Ron Rivera. It's okay, you know, maybe we don't have the information, the scouting, or maybe it's just like we're in a bad position to find a quarterback this year. Let's get a stopgap guy whether that be a free agent that comes available, maybe Cam Newton. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but they could look for a stopgap option or roll with Kyle Allen or maybe Alex Smith comes back and say, okay, we're gonna get that guy next year. But obviously, in the year two of what is still a rebuild for Ron Rivera, he's got to find his long term option. I think this offseason, but he could punt on that if he really feels like the guy isn't there.
Sam, thank you, buddy. Enjoy the rest of your week.
Of course. Thanks for having me, guys.
Talk some Nats, please, Tommy. Rich Rowley of The Athletic covers those Nationals. Hot stove season. It's all happening. Kyle Schwarber won our hearts and minds by saying he thinks Juan Soto is good. Britt and I started clapping like a trained seal. But is this it? Is their lineup done? Are they going shopping for more position players, or is this the nine that you think they're going to field come opening day?
Well, first of all, I want to congratulate you guys. The big move to the new Times Club. Nats making moves. Granddaddy making moves. I do think that they're going to add another hitter. I don't know if it's going to be anyone to get excited about. Are we counting Ryan Zimmerman as what seems to be kind of an inevitable move at some point in time? I do think they are still like that top of the order, right-handed bat away from being a more complete lineup. But I don't know if they're going to run out here when it comes to budget, because, in my opinion, I'd rather have a starter at this juncture, because you've already added Schwarber and Josh Bell. I'd rather have a starting pitcher and make some competition for that fifth spot than add another bat. If it's an either-or scenario, I think you go towards pitching. If there's a way that you can add that bat and add a low-risk, high-reward starter, I'm all for it. I just don't know if they're going to have that room. We don't know what the budget is, and that's sort of the 1,000-pound gorilla in the room, right? No one really knows where they can stop.
Britt Ciroli of The Athletic does an awesome job covering the Nats. I liked your piece where you tried to look at the lineup, so let's do that for a second. Now, I want Juan Soto moved up as high as you can get him into that two area, three area at worst. I mean, where do Bell and Schwarber fit in, do you think, right now, if you're trying to pencil in a lineup for Davey Martinez?
Yeah, so I agree with you. I think if you look at, the numbers and the data, it tells you to bat Juan Soto higher. He's going to get more at-bats. So I like Soto batting behind Trey Turner. And then you go Bell Schwarber, especially against a righty. I think that's a strong lineup. You go maybe Starling Castro. Then you finish it off with, Carter Kieboom, Yan Gomes, Victor Robles. Certainly the big piece here is what happens with Robles. Can he develop into maybe that legitimate leadoff guy? That would definitely a boon for them. I think if they face a lefty, you can move Gomes up the lineup. Potentially, depending on matchup, you could substitute Schwarber out for Josh Harrison. You could, if you do re-sign Zimmerman, you could have him start in place of Bell as like a defensive replacement. So there is some flexibility. And this lineup is a lot better than the lineup they ended the season with. I think people are disappointed that they didn't get some of these higher-end names. But you look at these upgrades, and they're significant upgrades over what they had. Kyle Schwarber is a much better offensive player than Andrew Stevenson, right? So you have to go back and forth. Josh Bell is a much better offensive player than Howie Kendrick, who was hurt most of last year. And, of course, the matchup with Asdrubal Cabrera, the platoon there with Eric Thames, wildly underperformed as well. So I think this lineup looks pretty good. Is it perfect? No. Is it going to strike out a lot? Yes. But it's got some thump in a lot of different places.
All right, two-parter. For me, I want to know what else they're doing at catcher. Gomes has been part of a timeshare. Are they just going to promote from within for that timeshare? And then second, what's the next thing that they've got to do here, or the next item to check off the list?
Yeah, so good questions. I think, we talk about catchers and everyone wants to know about, JT Realmuto. The fact of the matter is, unless that market collapses, I don't see a scenario where they can add him and really do anything else and still stay under that collective bargaining tax that they've tried so hard, the luxury tax, to get under and stay under. So I think unless his market implodes, which it could, this is part of how they got Max Scherzer, some of that market kind of fell out, they could get him. But I don't see that really happening. I'd like for them to get a defensive-minded catcher more along the lines of like a Yadi Molina, because right now you look at this team and defensively, and I wrote about it earlier in this offseason, before they got Schwarber, there's a lot of holes. You can kind of see the starting pitchers like, okay, what are we doing here? Yes, we have offense, but it's now at the expense of defense. I'd love for them to get a veteran catcher along those lines. Internally, there are some options. Obviously, Trace Barrera is a guy who, you know, coming off that suspension, could factor in at some point this season. I don't think that they're married to the idea of going out and getting a catcher. I think, in my mind, they want to turn this towards pitching, which was your second question. What do they do next? Well, tomorrow they are, as I reported last week, one of about a dozen clubs is going to watch free agent Corey Kluber start. He's going to pitch at Eric Cressy's place down in Florida. Certainly the injuries that have limited him over the last couple seasons are a concern, but that's the kind of thing they should be interested in, these low-risk, high-reward type guys where you take a flyer on him for a year and see if it shakes out. So I think that they're going to look at that rotation and say, we've got to do better at this fourth spot. Ideally, you have that fifth spot. You have three guys competing for that fifth spot, Joe Ross, Eric Fetty, Austin Voth. You don't have three guys competing for those two spots. We saw, even in the 60-game season, guys, we saw how much that can hurt a team, having two starters where you're just not sure you're going to get length, you're just not sure what you're going to get. I think they have got to add some pitching. People have asked me about the bullpen. I'm a little less worried about the bullpen. People forget that they did add to the bullpen last winter, Will Harris, Daniel Hudson. Yes, those guys had down years. Yes, they need a lefty because they lost Sean Doolittle. But to me, if you're going to go out and spend right now, your last remaining good chunk of money, it's on a starting pitcher. It's on something that's going to help this team win and going to save the bullpen, too. I think Tanner Rainey could step into that closer role. I think they have some options in relief. I'm really curious to see what the reports are coming out of Kluber's throwing session tomorrow.
Rip, thank you. Really appreciate it.
All right, guys. Take care.
Be Talk well. Soon. Good information. And check her workout in The Athletic. That is your Beltway Blitz. We'll do it every day at 4 o'clock, covering the teams in town you care the most about. The Nats, one of those three clubs today. Danny, you know who I wouldn't want to be right now as a Texans fan?
Yeah,
so
it's awkward.
Last week, there was the rumor that Deshaun Watson might want to be traded. He's got a full no-trade clause, and it's probably still really unlikely that he leaves. But Andre Johnson came out today on social media and said the Texans, and I'm paraphrasing, but they'll kill your career. Like, stand your ground, Deshaun. To which DeAndre Hopkins responded to that and said, listen to what Andre Johnson is saying. Those are two of the best receivers in team history and two of the best players in team history. Watson is apparently at odds with them and really angry. He wanted them to interview certain candidates that he likes as a GM, as a head coach, which they decided against, I guess, with their GM search. Now they are going to interview Eric Bieniemy. They were the only team not supposed to. Seems like they're placating Watson in that regard. But if I'm a Texans fan, this could go sideways really, really fast when a guy who runs your entire team and all the players look to for their lead is seemingly not happy being there at all.
Yeah, you need to build around, not build between. That's what it seems like is happening right now. It's not good.
G&D on the Fan. Might we have seen the end of Ryan Kerrigan in D.C.? We'll get into that next on Grant and Danny. He's Danny, I'm Grant. You are listening to The Fan, our 5 at 5, 30 minutes out. All the news of the day that was. Make sure you're locked in at that time. By the way, Danny, our guy Tom Plyman in the update there just said that guests can no longer show up at the team hotel and hang out with you.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
But, Daddy, what does he mean? Who goes to the team hotel, Daddy? Who hangs out with these players, Papa? Well, you see, son, when you're in a new city for a couple of days, you catch up with old friends from college and old buddies who you haven't seen in a while. But, Papa, who's he going to be hanging out with? Why is he hanging out with friends, Daddy? Adults do that, too? Is it a sleepover?
It can be one friend at a time, son, and sometimes many friends. It all depends on the player and depends on the city. Now go back to your room. Oh, man. That's tough. I mean, listen, we're making jokes here, but that's like one of the best things about being one of the best things about being in the NBA is you go on the road and some things happen for you. That's what I'll say.
Players were previously allowed to have up to two guests in hotel rooms, including
you won't turn two.
including those who were family members and long-standing personal friends. Who was that was in your hotel room last night? Oh, that was a long-standing personal friend.
Long-standing. Mm,
very attractive personal long-standing personal friend in your room. Anyway, I digress. No
of course.
Friends can hang out. None of your buddies who you know from your days in college when you visit your town. None of that.
Nope.
Not at the team hotel. So thank you for that update to our buddy.
Turning to.
There it is.
There it is.
And Danny.
That's the one. Thank you to the Tom and the Thom for their hard work in helping us to make some sense of that. All right, Ryan Kerrigan. Have we seen the end of him in D.C.? I got to be honest with you. I don't want to say that it's a lock. I don't want to say that this is a done deal because it's not. But all the tea leaves are trending in that direction. Tommy, I'm going to put you on the spot and let me know. It's going to take a minute or two, I'm sure. Let me know if you can grab Rivera on Kerrigan from our show yesterday. But everything that I've heard, including talking to the head coach on the team with you yesterday, Danny, including just some of the information that I have gathered from reaching out to people within the organization, and then also I'll tell you what was damaging to the cause of someone who thinks Kerrigan's coming back, the video of him from after the game.
Yep.
One of the last guys to get into the tunnel, legitimately just standing on the field looking around the stadium as if he is soaking it up one final time. I'm going to be, I don't think heartbroken is too sad to say, that I will be heartbroken that he did not get the just due that he deserved. Not that he's leaving. I'm an adult. I'm his age. You know, I'm 32. I'm not going to cry because Ryan Kerrigan's not on Washington anymore. I will tell you that he is a pro. He's what all of my players should strive to be off the field, on the field. He was one of the reasons why this team was as competitive as they were while he was here. If he leaves, I wish everybody invested the time, the energy, the effort, put the money into their bodies and the care into their craft that he does. And he was immensely successful on the field because of it. But where I'll be sad is, and this is another victim of COVID. Mm-hmm. He should have been able to wave at that crowd as he went into the tunnel and they chanted his name one final time. You know, he should have been able to come off the field with a couple of plays left or whatever so that he could get that one last ovation. And the fact that that's not going to happen probably is a kick to my stomach because I think that that guy is everything that I want this organization to be about.
100%. 100%. This is what it's supposed to look like. First-round draft pick, multiple contracts with the team, hyper-productive, go off into the sunset on your own terms. And that's kind of not how it's going to go because of this. Now, there are far greater tragedies related to COVID. We know that. But just when it's speaking of this one in particular, he was everything that you could have wanted, a really productive player who oftentimes, when it came league-wide or even among then Redskin, now Washington football team fans, probably got overlooked, to be honest with you. I mean, look at these years in a row. 13.5, 9.5, 11, 13, 13. That five-year run, that's as good as anybody has ever had in this uniform, rushing the passer, ever. And there's a reason you end up as the all-time sack leader in franchise history. He was great. He was a really, really good player and a great citizen of this area, did so much, and was, you know, again, the kind of guy you hang your hat on, just a stud.
And somehow completely undervalued by the fan base. I won't say completely that strong, but undervalued by the fan base. Now, I think it's because of how he conducted himself, because he wasn't a me guy, because he didn't say or do crazy things, because you never really heard about him other than, you know, when he's doing something really positive with a golf tournament or playing a waiter for a night at a bar with a bunch of celebrities or whatever it was that he was doing to raise money for local children's hospitals and different projects. But, you know, we sit here in this organization where we lack good players and nobody makes all pro appearances and pro bowls are few and far between and wins are scarce. And we pick apart guys like Ryan Kerrigan. Well, how good is he really? Is he great or is he just good? Is he one of the best pass rushers in the league or not? I know only Aaron Donald had more sacks over the last 2 years, but let's go through every sack and see, you know, how special and elite he really is. Is he TJ Watt? Is he Khalil Mack or is he just okay? But yet, like, we crown guys, too, that are the opposite of that, you know, for a couple of years. Like, Brian Arakpo's right. The dude that everybody cares
about. I heard
more about
Darius Geis, who had one good game as a pro.
Correct.
Than I did about Ryan Kerrigan.
So true. Like, it takes 2 weeks. And, like, Cam Sims has a game where he catches six balls, and it's, you know, he's the toast of the town, but we're going to pick Kerrigan apart. It's very, very weird. This was Rivera when we asked him on the show yesterday if Ryan Kerrigan's coming back.
Well, I think the biggest thing, more so than anything else, is we've got to get to that situation first to find out. You know, I know he talked about wanting to be a starter again, which I understand and respect completely. I get that. And I'd rather have a guy say he wants to start as opposed to a guy say, I just want to be on the team. You know, but have a guy like Ryan back would be outstanding. Why? Because he sets the example. And we've got young guys that need that example. I mean, Chase and Montez are two young guys that I know looked up to Ryan. They both understand who Ryan is for us. And having him around as the example for two young guys, I can't imagine anything being better, especially when you're developing, learning, and growing.
Kerrigan, a model citizen. Nice to have him back, sure, but that answer right there told me he ain't coming back. And what I mean by that is not to say that Rivera's not saying that they don't want him back, but he said he's talked about wanting to start again. Well, it's over. You can't start here. You got Montez Sweat, who had double-digit sacks if you count the playoffs. You've got Chase Young, who doesn't come off the field. He's designed in a laboratory to never get tired. So you saw the play time for Kerrigan this year. And I'll give you credit, because one thing you said when they drafted Chase Young is, you have these three guys, basically. It means that someone's going to be on the outside looking in, whether that's Sweat or Kerrigan or what have you. And it was never going to be Sweat, obviously. I thought that's all three would be on the field way more. I did. I just thought there's a way to get these guys on the field. I don't care if you got to kick Young inside occasionally or Kerrigan inside or rush two guys from the same side. I would play all three of them and get to the quarterback. That really didn't happen as often as I would have thought. On average, by the way, this year, how many times a game, take a guess, on average, how many times a game Ryan Kerrigan, rushed the quarterback this year?
12 to 15?
You're right on it. 15 times per game.
There you go.
Here are some numbers on just individual games and how many pass rushing plays he got. Two against the Giants the first time you played New York. Nine against the Cowboys. Eight against the Panthers. 12 against the Eagles at the end of the season. Some single-digit, low double-digit games. There were two games that I can see in his entire game log where he had 20-plus snaps against the pass to actually rush the quarterback.
Cleveland
so if you're
was
Ryan
one
Kerrigan,
when Chase Young didn't play, right?
Yeah, probably, yeah. When Chase Young missed the game. And when he played, now you're down to one game where that happened. But if you're Kerrigan and you're 32 years old and you do think, I can still do this, I had a two-sack game against the Eagles. I made the most and was ultra-efficient with limited opportunities. It's not going to happen here. You got a situation where you're from the Indianapolis area. Maybe the Colts are interesting to you. Perhaps you decide, look, my wife's from California, and I stay there at times. There are two coaches in California, and Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan, who I know from their time here. Those are both contenders. Like, you got options, I would think. The question is, can you find a starting role where you get to play as much as you want? Because if you're going to be a backup somewhere else, why wouldn't you just stay here and be a backup here where you're beloved, where you've set up shop, where you've been your entire career?
Well, there's a difference between being – I mean, we think of starters and backups as a very finite thing. If you're part of a pass rush rotation where you're coming in on second and eight to stay on the field and you get pass rushing chances – that's different than just being what he was, which this year was definitively, as you kind of touched on, a backup. You look at his snap counts, they're paltry in games where the other two guys were healthy. I mean, you're looking at 16 snaps in a game against Philadelphia, 27 snaps in the game against Tampa. That's basically a third of the game, very few pass rushing opportunities. If he still has a chance to get up the football field and rush the passer, he'd be in the 8-9 sack range. That's who he is at this point. Now, he's nowhere near as dynamic as the other two guys. He's not swooping in like Chase Young did to pick that fumble up and run it back. He's not tipping the pass to himself and picking it off like Montez Sweat did against Dallas. But can he sack the quarterback at a pretty decent rate? Yeah. So I don't blame him. He should go. He should find someplace that wants to give him plenty of situational, at a minimum, pass rushing opportunities. Even if it's not a full-time starter where you got your hand in the dirt, you got to stop the run on first down, he's going to have more snaps somewhere else next year.
So it sounds like in a boring way, but I mean, we don't fake arguments on this show. We're not Stephen A. Smith and Max Kellerman. Look into my camera. Where's my camera?
Lugubrious. Toyota to sell.
You think Kerrigan is going to want out, and it's not that Washington's ready to move on as much as he will find another home, and I mean, it sounds like we both agree that he won't be here.
Yeah, I don't think he's probably excited about that because this is where he's known. He knows where all the roads go, where the restaurants are, and bought his house and lives here and has been part of the fabric of this community. But if I'm him, I'm going, I still got juice left. And I kind of got pushed aside. I get why it happened. I understand. These two kids have incredibly high ceilings. This is the negative part of the league. In most other years, by the way, it would have been.
Two children that he's got now?
No. I mean Sweat and Chase Young.
Oh,
I'm
gotcha.
If I'm him, I'm going, in any other organization, almost any other year, the number two pick isn't going to be that defensive end. It would have been Sweat and Kerrigan. He would have had nice totals. We talked about resigning him, et cetera. But Chase Young comes along, sort of changes everybody's plans, right? So if I'm Kerrigan, I'm going, the writing's on the wall. Even if they offered me, you know, a decent amount of money, which would be foolish of them to do, by the way, given how little I played this year, I can make a decent amount, but more importantly to me, I can get myself well over 100 sacks next year. And we can start talking about different things beyond, oh, it's nice, I'm one of the leaders for the Redskins in all-time sacks and some things. That's cool. You can start talking about different stuff. If he ends up with a couple more productive years, he'll be around 115, 116 sacks. You can start talking about Canton stuff for him. And I know that sounds crazy to folks, but when you add up those counting totals and you look at some of those years, it's not outlandish.
Well, also, if you're him, you want to win a Super Bowl, don't you?
Oh, is that too, yeah.
It's probably not happening here based on just history and the last quarter century and what we know to be the case and where the team is now compared to where they would need to be in the next couple seasons. So you could go chase that, too, as part of whatever you want to accomplish. $11.7 million is what he cost against the cap this past year and what he made, right under $12 million. I mean, I don't know what he'll make on the open market. I had someone tell me once, you pay someone $1 million for every sack they get on average at that position. Not that that's all they do, but that's just kind of a nice little measure for what guys are often worth on the open market. I think he could easily go somewhere and sign, if he's like a third guy who rotates and plays a lot, for 2-12. I actually think he'll get more than that, though, honestly. I just think his career, his resume is too good. I know the last couple years, based on injury and then not playing as much this year, will hurt his chance to maybe make double-digit millions. But it might be 2-16 or 3-24 or something like that. I mean, if a guy like Trent Murphy can leave and go get that much money after 1 year, I got to imagine Kerrigan at 32, the way he's taking care of his body, could be in that mix as well. And he didn't take care of his body this well. And, like, never go out after 7 p.m. and never take a day off from doing his workout so that he could retire at 32. I think it was probably so that he could have a really long career. I want to tell a really good Ryan Kerrigan story next that I'm not sure we've told on the air. And if we have, it's been many, many, many years. So I'll tell that story next. You'll remember this, but I don't know if you know all the details of it. It's kind of funny. And then we'll take some calls on this. So we'll open up the AAA Always On Call listener lines at 800-636-1067. Do you think we've reached the end of the road for Ryan Kerrigan in Washington, D.C.? This is The Fan.
The new year has arrived. It's Danny Ruye here, and I've told you guys how EMP 180 has changed my life, right? Traditionally, what happens in the new year? We all go to the gym to try to get fit. We stick to it for like an hour and a half, and then that's it, right? I tried for years to do this on my own, and I failed because I didn't know how to eat healthy. That's the key, especially when you start to get to be my age and older, right? I'm in my 40s now. You got to take care of yourself, not just at the gym, but 24/7 all the time. I went to EMP 4 years ago, and the results were amazing. Changed my life. Kept the muscle, lost the body fat, felt better than I had since I was in my early 20s. So do what I did, do what thousands of listeners have done. Go to EMP180 now because they're unlike anywhere else. It's your own nutritional coach with your own personalized plan. Not some app you log into and do all by yourself. Your personal wellness coach works with you weekly, adjusting your program as needed. EMP180 is the last program you will ever need. So you got remote check-ins, you got in-person safe meetings, hybrid program, whatever works. So give them a call. That's 855-888-0180, 855-888-0180, or emp180.com.
Ryan Kerrigan is Washington's all-time leader in sacks. He may have played his final game with the team against the Bucks on Saturday night. He was seen after the game, looking around the stadium, taking his time, leaving the field before walking into the tunnel. And if he doesn't get to play any more games, it's just going to be tough and sad because he didn't get that final ovation, that final goodbye. We both seem to think that that was it for Kerrigan in burgundy and gold, unfortunately. He has been not only a really good player, but just an excellent person off the field for so long. And obviously good to us as a show and to every media member. I mean, he's just the epitome of a professional. But I wanted to tell a quick story, and we can hit a few calls at 800-636-1067 on Kerrigan in a minute. 12 minutes from now at 5 o'clock, 5 at 5, all the big stories of the day, and we'll go through all of them in case you're just jumping in the car and have missed a few things. So in 2011, Kerrigan's draft year, he ends up getting taken by Washington after they moved back. I think people forget they were on the clock at number 10, and they traded back several spots, and they took him in the back end of the top 20. That was the year everyone thought they were supposed to trade up to get Blaine Gabbert, and then they stayed put at 10, and they still didn't take Gabbert, and they moved back and got Kerrigan. It ended up being just an awesome pick. I mean, there are other guys, obviously, that they didn't take who had
J.J. Watt.
Yeah, J.J. Watt is one of them that where you go, okay, they maybe could have made a better pick if you want to do it that way and redraft now. But it was just an amazing selection, and he's been a great player for them in the middle of the first round. Having said that, the story comes from that night. So in 2011, leading up to the draft, I'm on the beat for the Washington football team, covering the team for 106.7 The Fan. And I was tasked with trying to track down college prospects to get on the station. And among the like really good first round, top half of the board kind of players, the one guy that I was able to get locked in like a week or two before the draft was Ryan Kerrigan. And I don't even remember how it all worked through an agent or something, but it's just funny because we ended up getting one guy on at the time, LeVar and Dukes, in this time slot on 106.7 The Fan. And he was the one guy I got them, and it turns out that they draft him.
Right.
Well, he goes on their show, and he does an interview as a player at Purdue, and they're asking him about all of his forced fumbles and this big year he had and whatnot. Goes to the combine, has a big combine. They end up drafting him. On draft night, there's a video out there of him getting picked, okay? You can probably look this up on YouTube. And, like, as he's being picked or in the moments after he's being picked, he gets a phone call from, like, a Northern Virginia area code that he answers, and he, like, doesn't know what to do, and he's, like, very awkward, and he's, like, staring at the phone, and he's, like, pointing to it and telling people around him he doesn't know what's going on. The person that called him was one of the young, like, assistant producers that worked on this show, LeVar and Dukes, back then, who still had his number from when I got him on with them, or he called in, I guess.
Amazing.
And he was, like, having some watch party celebrating with his buddies. And this violates, like, every rule of producing in radio.
All of the rules here, yeah.
Having phone numbers, and it's, like, utterly inappropriate. But it is hilarious now in hindsight that it was Ryan Kerrigan. So this guy calls him up to – I don't know what exactly he was doing that night or how much fun he'd been having. But he calls him up to, like, congratulate him on the pick. And it's – I'm sure it's loud at his place – and it's loud at Ryan Kerrigan's place.
What?
But if you watch this video, I'm telling you, just look at when Ryan Kerrigan got drafted. And I know for a long time it was on YouTube. The phone call he gets, that's what it was. It was like one of the producers at our station calling him to just like do shtick. Basically be like, dude, they drafted you. And it's
congrats, bro.
Seconds after his name. And he only answers, I'm sure,
because
in his mind. Yeah, it's Mike Shanahan. Mike Shanahan's got to tell him, you're on the team now.
Or it's like, Dan from the yacht. You know what I mean? He's just so excited.
You're one of us. But I just thought, and knowing him now, as well as we do, like the nicest guy in the world.
Sure, I'll get that call.
He's not going to, he's not going to be mean. Like, he's not going to be like, are you kidding me? But it's so perfect. I'm actually watching the video right now. So he hangs up. He's like all happy, hugs his mom, you know, whatever. And then the phone goes off again. Oh, it's my favorite. Do you remember that at all?
I didn't off the top of my head, but that now sounds very familiar. But by the way, because I remember I was doing, you know what, actually, I couldn't watch it. You know why I couldn't watch it? One of those weird nights, because the fan at that point, I think I was still doing nights at the time of the draft. Or I was doing some kind of draft special, but there was a game on the station. So I was doing an online stream only when nobody was streaming anything. For like three or four people that were like sort of chiming in at some chat window. And then we cut over to live on the station after Ryan Kerrigan had been picked. So I couldn't actually watch it. I had to do it from some rogue studio because the regular studio in Fairfax was in use for whatever game it was. Right. It wasn't like the facility we have now. So I actually didn't see anything on television. I'm sitting there watching the ESPN crawl and just like refreshing my internet at the time. So I missed most of those cool like draft or fun draft night things.
Just watching it now. So the call starts. It's about a 25-second call. He picks up the phone at about 57 seconds.
That's an eternity. That's an eternity.
And it's him the whole time going like, who is this? What is going on? And he's so confused. Oh, it's great. Let's go
by the way. Oh, go ahead,
yeah,
please.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say, that draft class, man. MVP Cam Newton at the top, but then you go Von Miller, A.J. Green, Patrick Peterson, Julio Jones, Tyron Smith, J.J. Watt, Robert Quinn, Mike Pouncey, Ryan Kerrigan, you know, down the list even further, Cameron Jordan playing this weekend still, Jimmy Smith, a stud.
Cam Jordan got drafted that late?
Yeah. Cameron Hayward. Wow. I mean, that first round of defenders and a couple skill guys thrown in the mixture, what a first round that was. What a first round.
Let's go to Dre in Manassas on G&D. What's up, Dre? How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well, gentlemen. Listen, you know, if this indeed was his last game, by the way, one of the callers a couple of hours ago said something about Alex Smith needed to come back and, you know, ring of fame and, you know, start an ovation. Let's not forget this guy's only played 11 games for his franchise. So everything he said, he should have been saying about Kerrigan. Kerrigan, you know, has done all these things over the years. I mean, he's even a poet. You know, all those love poems he's written over the years. You know, he's a great dude, and he will be missed. I will say this, however, you know, I don't say shame on the Reds, the Washington football team, but if he was going to leave, then they should have traded him in the middle of the year to get some picks. This was, you know, worst nightmare was going to. It's too strong, but you know, you should have done best. You should have done better. You should have. It should have been more about business than personal. And I think with Kerrigan, they kept it personal by not trading him. If, in fact, this is going to be his last game, we could have probably, the team could have probably got some picks, or eight picks or something.
Even if it was like fourth or fifth. I just
how I felt at the time, yeah.
Yeah, thanks for the call. It's a good point. It really is. I don't know what was offered. You know, I don't know if teams were particularly interested. You're trading for a guy who hadn't been playing a whole lot. What are you giving up? I mean, if your point is get anything that you can, okay, I wouldn't trade it. When I'm a team trying to win a division, who I think might be able to win a playoff game, and that's not a crazy thing to say after we just saw that Bucks game, I'm going to trade him for a 6? No chance. A 5? No, I'm not doing that. Is a team giving up a mid-round pick for Kerrigan? I doubt it. I'm not sure that there was a middle ground there, to be honest with you. Rick in that's Oxon important. Hill, you're online too. What's up, Rick?
Hey, what's going on, guys? What's going on, man?
Buddy.
As far as Kerrigan, man, if I could keep him and just have him around just as that presence, I would, man. I would love to have him around these young guys and to show them how to be the professional he's been. I mean, good times and bad, I would. But, I mean, realistically, what's best for him, and I respect him enough, let him go on. He'll probably be on some contender team. And, you know, it's best for him. You know, he's definitely done his time here. He's been very loyal. I'm sure these younger guys like Chase Young and Montez Sweat, they've seen this guy working. You know, how to carry themselves like a professional, let him go on, you know. It's bittersweet, but I definitely respect Kerrigan enough to you know, stamp his resume a little more or attempt to, you know, whether it's going to a team that needs a linebacker, because I'm sure he still has juice left in the tank. I mean, Kerrigan is Kerrigan, man. I love that guy. And right now where we're at and where we're rebuilding and everything, it's just not conducive to, you know, stamping his resume. So I hate to see him go. I love to just keep him around selfishly and just show these guys and help out, but you know, it's what's best for him.
It reminds me a little bit of Lorenzo Alexander, honestly, where people are saying, you know, it's tough to see him go. He's a fan favorite, what have you. But it makes sense for both parties and certainly for the player, and you'll root for him. At that time, it was Arizona and eventually Buffalo when he made the Pro Bowl, became a Pro Bowl MVP. The 5 at 5, some of the bigger stories in the day. We'll mow through everything going on in sports next on G&D.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.